Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying, multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which have sadly included pregnancy loss, I am finally pregnant. Hi there, how are you doing? Welcome to episode 3 of the Finally Pregnant podcast. Today we're going to be chatting to Jazz Rabadia, and I will introduce her when the interview starts. But I just thought I'd give you a little update on where I am right now. I'm 37 weeks and 3 days today, and not far away, as you'll hear when we're chatting, from my potential induction. Who knows what might happen in the meantime. I had a consultant appointment yesterday, and I ended up going to the induction ward just to pick something up before I had my appointment. And I've got to be honest, it made everything feel very, very real. And it was quite scary and exciting, but just overall, it was just really quite emotional for me. And I was on my own. And yeah, it was just a really surreal experience. I have to say, the next time I'm going to be in there, potentially, is going to be to actually have baby Bobcat. And I had my appointment afterwards with the consultant, and it did make me question my choice to have an induction versus a C-section. But chatting to her, because they've been really good with me and they've said, you know, they kind of leave it in my hands to make the decision. Although having said that, when I said about the C-section, she didn't sound that excited to change. But she did point out that as much as there is a slightly more element of control with a C-section, i.e. you're kind of booked in, you know what day you're going in, everyone's calm because they know it's happening, etc., it is still a massive operation, you know, and so it comes with its own risks. I don't know. Like, I think the trouble is, none of us know, do we? There isn't a right and wrong. There really isn't. There are some people who have to for various reasons. Someone I know, because of a previous fibroid operation, has to have a C-section. So that's, you know, that's a given. They need to do that. But if you are in a situation where you've never had a child before, there's no reason that you should have one or the other, or just wait for a natural birth. That, yeah, we don't know. We don't really know what's right or wrong. Oh, I guess I'll find out quite soon. Possibly by the time you're listening to this, we'll know. Who knows? In fact, I'm recording this, and the plan at the moment is for it to go out the day that I go in for our induction. So we'll see. Who knows? But anyway, I digress. Today we're going to be talking to Jazz about her experience. There is one thing that I just want to highlight now, because we do talk about a very sensitive subject, and I'm just going to explain it now, and then you can decide whether you want to listen on. Jazz got pregnant the first time through IVF, and then very quickly after she had her son, she got pregnant naturally, but she did miscarry that pregnancy. And we do talk about that just for a short period. Maybe I'll put in the show notes what the timing is of that discussion so that you can skip it out if you want to. That's an option. I would say the rest of the conversation is really positive and uplifting and definitely worth listening to. Hopefully you feel like we handled it sensitively and can understand why it's in and why I've left it in, because I did question and wonder if I should take it out. But this does happen, and lots of different people are going to be listening to this for various reasons at different stages. And I just want to try and cover lots of different topics, but I totally appreciate that some things you don't want to hear at certain times. So I just wanted to highlight that now. Hopefully you can still listen on, or, you know, come back to it another time if you want to, because she's fabulous, you know, and it's a really great conversation, I think. So, but yeah, I just wanted to give you the heads up about that bit. I'm going to leave it now to you to listen and enjoy the rest of your day thereafter. Make sure that you subscribe if you haven't already. Please rate and review the podcast and share it if you would, so that everyone can hear it and it can reach the people that need it. And I'll just finish by saying thank you so much to everyone who has fed back, everyone who listens, everyone who has contacted me. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it and how much I have enjoyed making this podcast and how much I've enjoyed chatting to so many of you about it. So thank you so much. And yeah, enjoy the rest of the show. Hi there. So today I am joined by the lovely Jazz, who I met earlier this year when she joined us for a Cat and Alice event and was part of our Every Story Matters panel, which was amazing. Jazz is an IVF mum to 15-month-old Dean and is going to be talking to us about her experiences going through pregnancy and also being an IVF mum and coming from a British Asian background as well, and how that might affect things. If it does, we'll see. So Jazz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah, I love chatting to you because you just kind of tell it like it is, and I love that. That's perfect.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't know any other way.
I'm all about it. So that's all good. All good. So do you want to bring us, you know, this is about pregnancy and also your kind of being a mum, but give us a bit of background. Tell us how Dean came about.
Sure. Well, Dean was about 3 months in the making. 3 years in the making. I think, you know, we had a really good, strong, solid marriage under our belt. Loads of nieces and nephews, the kind of desire to start our own family started straight into our marriage, really. Didn't anticipate it would take as long as it did. Wasn't aware of all the kind of potential things that could all need to fall into place. And found that really strange, actually, as an educated woman, how little I knew about making babies. But yeah, Dean was, I never kind of thought it would get to the stage of IVF. So we tried everything along the way, kind of unknown as to why we couldn't fall pregnant naturally. So one of the kind of, I think it's 25% of cases that has unresolved IVF diagnosis. And yeah, so he was just, I guess, a baby made from science and love. And I love telling that story. And I think it's really important to tell that story, that actually this old school thought that we have of how babies are made isn't a reality for so many of us. So I really just want to raise the awareness of the fact that actually assisted conception is a great route into motherhood if it works, and just conscious that it doesn't always work for everybody. But yeah, I mean, I think going through the process and actually finally falling pregnant after years of kind of infertility struggle was a completely different experience, I would imagine, to those that fall pregnant naturally or those that fall pregnant quite easily. I think time really does play its part in that, in making the journey that much more painful and making every step of that journey a little bit more, I guess, just you have to be really appreciative of every day that goes past, thinking I made it through another day. And you're constantly, I guess, thinking, what if this pregnancy isn't successful? And that's what my pregnancy was like for me. I don't think I actually ever fully celebrated it or embraced it, because I was just scared that it might get taken away from me at any point during that pregnancy. So I lived a lot of my pregnancy in fear, which I don't know if that was down to the kind of how I fell pregnant eventually. But yeah, I think that played a really big part in kind of, hey, I've been through IVF, I've gone through the physical, emotional, mental pain of this. And now that I'm finally pregnant, I just need to not get too excited, not get ahead of myself, and actually take every single day as it comes.
It's such a common thing. It really is. I think that, you know, whenever I speak to people, and I'm in a position now where people quite often tell me quite early on in their pregnancies, before they've put it publicly on Instagram, even within the community, or before they've told anyone else. And from the beginning, people are scared. And it's interesting what you say about, you know, because we don't know if it is different to people who conceive quite easily and naturally, kind of first, second, third, even, you know, 6 months in, we have no direct comparison, I guess. Possibly if people have fallen pregnant naturally the first time and then struggle with secondary infertility, then there is a bit more of a comparison. But we don't actually know, and we'll never know, just like they'll never appreciate entirely what we're going through. But you can only imagine that that is different, can't you, really? Because we've put so much into it. It's like when you get a negative test, even, versus when you get your period, kind of, even though you've tried naturally, you know, you've put so much into it that already you've kind of setting yourself up, you know, and so the fall is greater. But you did it. And were there any times during your pregnancy that you were able to, dare I say the word, relax or enjoy it? Did you make a point? How did you do that, if so?
Yeah, I mean, I remember actually getting past our 12-week scan and thinking, right, this is the moment. And I say, maybe I was a bit more willing to celebrate, but my husband's far more kind of conservative in his approach. And he was like, no, we've got to make sure, you know, before we tell anyone, because we had actually suffered some losses along the way. So I guess we were both a little bit conscious of that. And I thought, I just had this vision of my, you know, passing my 12-week scan with flying colors and me shouting it from the rooftops, you know, shouting the news that I'd been waiting to shout for so long. And yes, I kind of did. And it was really interesting as to some of the responses I got. And you kind of touched on the fact that, you know, maybe how do things differ in the kind of Asian community. And I felt I got a sense of that on my kind of how I announced the baby. So those that I wanted to tell face to face, of course, those that are really close to me, I had a face to face conversation and they were absolutely thrilled for me. But when I kind of got to the kind of associates or friends of friends or kind of that network, it was very much it was by WhatsApp. It was a really nice picture, kind of three Starbucks cups of different sizes, my name, my husband's name, and then question mark on the baby chino.
That's so cute.
That's only cute because I work for Starbucks. If I didn't work
for Starbucks, it wouldn't be fair enough. That wouldn't be
particularly cute. But it was some of the responses that got me thinking. It was like, a couple of them were along the lines of, oh yeah, I already knew, or so-and-so told me, really happy for you, or, you know, and I just kind of found it really interesting that how my news was made not to be about me and more about so-and-so told me. And I think that that's one of the things that is very apparent in the Asian community, is that everybody is always in your business. So up until the point of 12 weeks, I hadn't told a soul. Well, apart from my mum and my mother-in-law and my husband, they hadn't told a soul. Yet people somehow concluded that I was pregnant and decided, they were so confident in that, that they would then tell somebody else that I was pregnant. And then it kind of just spread like wildfire. And so that was my first kind of exposure to, hey, whilst this is a really kind of private journey, everybody's in on it. So if everybody wants to be in on it, then hey, let me let them in and let me tell them exactly what it entailed, so that it might stop them from spreading that rumor about somebody else next time round. And that's kind of why I've been really open about my journey into motherhood, the challenges, the super highs, and alongside that, the really super lows. So I think it's important for people to understand the full breadth of kind of the journey that people go on. If they're going to talk about it with some kind of knowledge and information behind it.
That's it. Talk about all of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Because people, it's amazing what people know, isn't it? Like, mm-hmm. I when we found out it was a girl, and people are like, I knew it was going to be a girl. What? No, you didn't. How did you know? And if you did, it was a 50-50. So it was a guess, you know, it's kind of like, but they knew you were pregnant. They, you know, like you say, they felt so confident. It's amazing. Yeah. People just like have this like inner kind of need to be right, don't they? But it's great then that you actually filled them in on the whole backstory. So like you say, it's not, this isn't gossip, this isn't about them, this is about everything you've been through to get there, and how important an announcement that is, and how much that means to you, and everything you're going through, which is so much more than gossip, isn't it? Let's face it. So well done you.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, Indian people like talking about babies, except for when you can't have them. you know, it's still such a taboo subject. And I mentioned at the kind of on the Every Story Matters panel, you know, it's the home of the Kama Sutra. India is the home of the Kama Sutra, yet we cannot openly, publicly talk about, you know, the fact that actually it's a Kama Sutra that we really need to know in order to try and procreate and etc. And so I think it's really interesting how it's something that was almost discovered in the motherland, but it's still such a taboo subject to talk about. And there's such a stigma attached to the fact that, hey, if you're struggling, it's, you know, it's because you're not doing something right. I also say that as a community, we're self-professed doctors, and we know how we can fix it. And I think just the lack of knowledge behind, you know, the science and the miracle that it is to have a child is just not understood. And in this kind of day and age, we really need to dispel some of the myths, get rid of the old wives' tales, and really just be there as a community to support one another, because that's ultimately what we are good at. So let's use our strengths to support people who are going through this kind of, through the challenges of not just infertility, but pregnancy and motherhood and kind of what happens thereafter.
Yeah, and that brings me really nicely actually to, once people did know, how was that, you know, and how did people rally round you? How did you suddenly then fall into, I suppose people didn't know beforehand about the IVF, but they did know very quickly thereafter. But did people treat you, and I say this always in inverted commas, like normally, did you feel like a normal pregnant person within your community? Was there any difference, you know, how do you think you felt, how do you think you were treated for the rest of your pregnancy once people knew?
I mean, I think similar to kind of how I was being treated medically is how I felt in the kind of real world. So once I'd had my treatment and I'd had my early pregnancy scan at 8 weeks, I was essentially signed off by kind of clinic that I was at, and I was put back into the system. I was, as far as anybody was concerned, I was a regular, you know, woman who'd managed to fall pregnant. There was no real reference back to the fact that I'd had IVF, or that I'd had frozen embryo transfer, or that I'd had a failed fresh cycle. Whilst it was in my notes, that wasn't really a consideration. And I remember at my 12-week scan, you know, when they were trying to date back, I was explaining to them, hey guys, I had a frozen embryo transfer at 5 days on this day. Surely it should be a really simple calculation. And then bringing out another wheel. And so the date, my due date given by the IVF clinic versus the due date given by the NHS hospital was 3 days apart.
Which one was and right?
Actually, Dean was one of, I think, one in 40 children that are born on their actual due date.
Oh, really? Because it doesn't happen very often, does it? Well, there you go, one in 40.
So it was the NHS.
Ah, there you go.
That managed to date it right. But I think going back to the kind of IVF is how you kind of your route into pregnancy. I feel like once you're pregnant, I didn't feel like I got treated any differently, either in the hospital or in the system or outside of that. I was, you know, people were still, I guess they didn't really understand if IVF could have an impact on the actual pregnancy journey. It was just a route to get pregnant.
Yeah. And people think, yeah, you're pregnant now, so everything's fine, don't they? And was it?
Yeah.
But you said at the beginning that you were scared pretty much all the way through. So it wasn't really, was it?
And again, but I don't know if most all pregnant women feel a certain element of fear. I feel like I felt it more possibly because I had longed for Dean for so long that I would constantly be thinking worst case scenario so that I could emotionally and physically and mentally prepare myself for that. That's possibly a personality thing as opposed to an IVF thing. But IVF, I think, has really made me who I am today. And so it's very much a part of my personality today. So I don't know if the two can be kind of separated as such. But yeah, I did constantly feel like, hey, I've worked so hard for this. I've waited so long for this. I've endured so much pain. Just didn't want to put all my eggs in one basket just in case. Yeah. But I wasn't, you know, I wasn't living in fear every single day. There were moments where I really enjoyed the pregnancy. And I think that first trimester is always scary because there was the most risk associated with the first. The second was actually really nice and enjoyable because it was that middle ground of, hey, I can still lead a normal life, but I've got a nice little bump and I feel pregnancy with the perks is how I like to describe it. And then the third trimester is, you know, I'm tired. I'm not sleeping. When can this be over? And I just want to be, I want to be a mum. I don't want to be pregnant kind of phase, but more to do with the physical pain than anything else.
Mm-hmm. And I am about 10 days out from my induction as we speak.
Hey.
So, and I think I'm thinking back to all the people that I've spoken to, and you are the first person who has, you know, had their baby. So tell me what I'm going to need to know in the next 10 days.
I think it really depends on what you want to know. And I think I was very clear that I think it's a school of two thoughts, right? You either want to know everything and want to be fully prepared, or you want to know nothing and just see how it goes, take it as it comes. I was definitely the latter. I did not want to know everybody's pregnancy story, or sorry, their labor story, because I thought it's not going to necessarily help me prepare. I'd rather just figure it out as I go. I had a bit of a plan in terms of what I wanted, kind of, you know, who I wanted with me and how I felt it was going to go. And like most people will tell you, that kind of just all goes to pots when you're actually in the situation. I mean, one thing that I am very, very thankful for, and one thing I'd ask you to consider, is whilst you might have a particular birthing partner in mind, they will also potentially need a break. So I really found it helpful that whilst my husband was there by my side throughout, my mum was there to support the both of us when we needed to switch around, you know, when he needed an hour to stretch his legs, or, you know, it doesn't happen quickly. So my advice to you would be, you know, bear that in mind, that it's kind of like, oh, although you're in labor, the two of you are in labor. So it's really important to kind of make sure you're both getting looked after.
I think that is really sound advice, actually, because it must be like, I don't know whether I've talked about this as part of one of the podcast episodes or just generally, it's a conversation I can imagine that I have kind of had a few times. It can be really hard being the person watching, can't it? Like emotionally draining and upsetting. And sometimes that's harder, I think, than actually being the person doing. Now, whether that's injections through IVF or struggling to sleep or feeling uncomfortable or in labour, even though obviously the labour is going to be the hardest thing, but you know what I mean. And so yeah, just putting in some kind of things so that they're looked after as well. I think that's a really, yeah, I hadn't necessarily thought about that. So, which, you know, and I do like to think that I'm quite considerate of Bob, but but I think that it's a really nice kind of timely reminder for me right now as well. One of my sisters is training to be a midwife, and she is, her elbows are sharpened to get into that room, which I'm not sure. I'm like, I don't know, Gabrielle. Yeah, she'll be straight there.
It's great to have somebody in the, you know, just waiting, because that's, my mom was on standby, right? I was like, if we need you, we will call you. And lo and behold, kind of 3 hours in, I was like, I want my mom. So yeah, it was, and it was just, like I said, not just for my benefit, but actually it was really helpful in giving my husband a little bit of a break and some time out.
Yeah, definitely. And did you have, so quick fire round, did you have a birthing plan?
Yes.
Did you use it?
Yes. I tried to stick to it as best as I could, but the pregnancy, you know, the way in which the pregnancy was unfolding wasn't playing ball. So I couldn't, I wanted to go down the whole, oh, natural, I'm going to breathe through this and I'm going to try and take minimal pain relief, but I couldn't because it took 36 hours.
Uh-huh. So what did you end up having? If you don't mind.
The full works, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
The entire package. I went through the motion. So I started off on a TENS machine. Which actually worked for a very long time. And if the labor wasn't so long, I reckon I could have got through a lot more hours of it through the TENS machine. So I would definitely recommend a TENS machine. it's really bizarre because you think, why does it work? How does it work? But it works, certainly works. And especially when I was like at home, very early stage contractions, it was a great kind of go-to. But then when I was at the hospital and there was kind of better pain relief on disposal, I took advantage. So I did gas and air. I eventually had to opt for the epidural. And I remember turning to my mum at the time, because she's quite, you know, pro au naturel route. And I remember turning to her saying, you know, in tears, saying, because I felt like maybe I'd let her down as well, saying, "Mum, I think I need the epidural." And when she turned back to me and said, "Yes, you do," that was like, for me, reassurance that, hey, she sees the pain. She knows I'm a strong person. And I am now pro epidural. I'm its biggest champion and fan, because it, yeah. And then post epidural, I felt like the pregnancy was kind of much more in my control.
That's good to know. Isn't it amazing that you're in the middle of giving birth and after everything you've been through, and you're still worried about letting someone else down? It's crazy, isn't it? We're, as humans, we're nuts. We really are. Yeah. It's like we're going through so much. We've been through so much to get here, and we're still worried about other people's feelings in that moment. It's amazing, really. But all was well. So going back to quickfire round, did you have a hospital bag?
Yes.
Is that a really silly question? I have got one.
Yeah, you need one.
Yeah. Did you use a lot of the stuff in it?
Yes, I did. I think it can get a bit, in terms of the list, can get a bit excessive. Ultimately, you need to make sure you've got enough to feel comfortably clothed in, have a quick shower in. Slippers are a must, especially ones that you don't have to bend down to put on. So you can literally just slip on. And for Dean, I didn't need a huge amount. I prepared for staying in for one night, which I did have to. So I'd say overnight kind of stuff. But everything else, you know, people were, my mum and husband were to and fro from the hospital, so they could kind of bring us stuff. I would say snacks. I didn't utilize my snacks enough. I did have a few in there, but I would say, depending on how long it takes or doesn't take, you know, it's always good to have a few kind of bickies or energy bars to keep you going.
Yeah, that's actually the one thing that I haven't got in mind so far, is some snacks. Mm-hmm. I'm conscious that I haven't got them in there. I know that I need to do that, but yeah, I definitely need to do that. And so moving on from that, we're going to touch upon something now that is quite difficult. So if you're listening and you are pregnant, you know, we are going to talk about this, because it does happen, and because there's a couple of questions around it that people contacted me about when I launched the podcast, to say, are you going to speak to someone that this has happened to? You subsequently, after your IVF pregnancy and Dean's here safely, you then went on to try naturally, and you got pregnant, didn't you, naturally? But sadly, within your first trimester, you lost that pregnancy.
Yes. Yeah, it was just, you know, you always hear of the fact that I'd kind of written off falling pregnant naturally, because it hadn't happened in the 3 to 4 years that we were trying. Therefore, what reason, you know, did I have for it to happen again, to happen naturally? But you always hear of these kind of stories of, after you have a baby in your first year, you're far more fertile, et cetera, et cetera. So we were not really actively trying for a baby. We were just thinking, well, we're unlikely to have a baby naturally, so, you know, we don't necessarily need to be protected. And so, yeah, I was quite shocked when I realized that I was actually pregnant, because it was difficult, because it was actually so soon after D, and I was like, oh my God, I'll be ready. And I was like, feeling really angry at myself for questioning whether we were ready or not for, you know, something that had taken us for, like, I was like, hey, you should consider this a blessing. You shouldn't be second guessing whether or not it's the right time or whether you could do it and the rest of it. So I remember thinking, feeling quite taken aback by the fact that, hey, we'd actually managed to fall pregnant naturally. And, you know, was Mother Nature finally on our side? But like you mentioned, unfortunately, we did, you know, in the first trimester, suffer a loss. It was very, very difficult, because a loss is a loss, right? And you can never really rationalize or justify why it has happened. But there was a part of me that was just reasoning with it by saying, hey, at least I have Dean, and at least I can fall pregnant naturally. And, you know, it clearly wasn't meant to be, so better now than later down the line, and all of those kind of things that I was saying to rationalize it. I think only now, maybe 6 months on, am I really actually grieving, because I spent so long trying to get over it and thinking, okay, fine, actually let me take all the positives out of this, that I didn't dwell on the negatives enough to fully kind of get it out of my system. And it's really interesting the way in which that time does play a part in this whole kind of loss journey. And I never really thought that it would surface so late, so kind of further down the line. I thought, right, it's happened. It was physically very challenging. It was mentally difficult to cope with and deal with. But hey, I got through it. And I got through it, some might say, quite quickly. But I think it's now starting to resurface in terms of surfacing in different ways, in ways that I didn't kind of or couldn't imagine at the time. But it's clearly an unresolved issue that I now need to kind of find ways to deal with.
I think that that's really common. I remember reading a piece of research several years ago now, when I was suffering a couple of miscarriages, and it was about a link between anxiety and miscarriage, and how they noticed the link kind of 9 months afterwards, which you kind of immediately you think due date, but it's not necessarily that 9 months later. But I totally agree that that is, you get over the physicality much quicker, and then the emotional thing. It took me, like, definitely it was kind of 9 months afterwards I found myself unraveling completely. But if I can bring you back to when you did get pregnant, and I love that you're kind of talking about rationalization, and this isn't, you know, the reason that it's happened. Sometimes a loss is a loss, and we don't necessarily know why. But what did you contact your fertility clinic, even though it was a natural pregnancy, or did you go straight to the NHS?
I went straight to my GP, who referred me for an early pregnancy scan, because I sensed that something wasn't 100% right.
Okay.
It happened to be at the hospital that I gave birth to Dian in. It wasn't the clinic. The clinic had nothing to do with this pregnancy at all. I'd fallen pregnant naturally. GP referred me for an EPU, which is great, because I wanted that kind of reassurance that the pregnancy is okay and is developing. So I had a scan which confirmed that, yes, you know, there was a heartbeat, and I was just back into the system, back into the NHS system, where no actual interaction with the clinic, because why would there be any? I didn't have a route in. I had been signed off as a kind of patient. I'd had my 2 free cycles on the NHS. So the only interaction I could potentially have with them would be if I was to have a private appointment. And it just didn't warrant it. And the pregnancy didn't warrant it. Because I have unexplained infertility, there is no kind of fundamental reason as to why I can't fall pregnant. I just assume that, hey, maybe... as they say, maybe I'm just more fertile and it's just work for us. I just didn't need that second opinion, because I just figured, oh, well, it's worked.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. And people do say that it kickstarts your kind of fertility. I was at my last NCT class on Tuesday, and there was a kind of, what do you need afterwards? And within the pack of maternity pads and massive knickers and all of that, like, sexy stuff, were condoms. And I was a bit like, yeah, I think we're all right. But, you know, it does happen. We know that this does happen. So we're almost up with time now. But how do you, like, moving forward, and I'm going to make a massive assumption here, which actually is possibly very rude of me, but I'm going to assume that you are anticipating that there might be more children in your future. How do you think that everything that has gone before today is going to impact, you know, your next pregnancy? Because it is going to happen. It is going to happen.
No, I think, you know, it's a really difficult question, because I would like to say it won't, because I want to, every pregnancy is different. And you kind of, I feel like you need to sometimes try and leave the baggage behind for your own sanity, if nothing else.
Love that.
So I'm hoping that it doesn't affect any pregnancies from here on. But I would say I'm much much more well-versed in some of the things that could go wrong, but also all of the ways in which it could go right. And I think that, you know, I said before, like, the journey and the struggle to motherhood has really shaped who I am today. And that's, you know, I love who I am today. And so I don't want that to change. And that's why I'm kind of, I embrace being an IVF mum. And because the result is beautiful. And I think it doesn't matter how you got there. If you can, yeah, I'm not shy. I'm not ashamed. Like, IVF has absolutely changed my life for the better. Science, tech, engineering, maths, all of the practitioners that make this happen, I am indebted to. And I would just like to think that the next pregnancy, hopefully, if and when it does come, would be one that I would start over with, and hopefully approach it with the mindset of, hey, every day is a reason to celebrate until there is a reason not to. Don't focus on the reason not to. Every day that you get through is, you know, is a reason to pop open a bottle of Pepsi Max in my case.
Mine was a Fanta. I couldn't do the caffeine. So yeah, the Fanta. Although then I interviewed Melanie Brown, the nutritionist, and yeah. And I haven't had one since because I've been so nervous about how much sugar I was having. But that's no bad thing. That's no bad thing. But I love that. I think that's such a refreshing and positive attitude to have. And, like, you know, if I ever get round to kind of taking sound bites, there's so many sound bites from what you've said that I just want to, I can see as Instagram posts. They're just like, yeah, definitely. We just need to let go as much as we can of what's gone before. Every pregnancy is different. I say exactly the same as you. Every single day we need to celebrate as much as we can. You know, if it's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong. It's, you know, that's not going to make the difference. It really isn't. And yeah, I hope that happens for you really, really soon. And thank you so much for sharing. And we didn't get round to talking about it too much, but I think you said enough almost with the, you know, it shaped who you are as a mum as well, which, and I'm lucky because I can see your face as we're chatting now, but, you know, there is a smile, there is an openness, there is a warmth, there is just a pure joy there, which is undoubtedly going to be reflected in the way that you mother Dean, for sure.
Yeah. And I think when you've longed for a baby for so long, like, that love just flows out of you. And I'm not saying, you know, someone who fell pregnant really quickly and kind of entered motherhood really quickly wouldn't have that same love, but I would just say that the kind of bond that I have with Dean is almost second to none. So even when the thoughts of a second baby cross my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to love this much, anybody else this much? Because, yeah, you know, the amount of time, energy, effort, pain we have endured to get this result, I don't know if I could if I would or could do that again in the same way.
I think it is different, isn't it? I think that, yeah, well, hopefully we'll find out if that's what our plans are, any of us really, you know. I feel really excited.
What are you most excited about kind of post 10 days? You've had a really easy, chilled out labor. What are you most excited about?
Oh, seeing Bob with her, I think, is one of my most excited things. I've got to be honest, I haven't got to the stage where I'm like, oh my God, I'm ready for this pregnancy to be over. And I hate to kind of gloat by saying that, because at NCT, like, some of the girls, and they're all behind me date-wise, they're all like, oh, I'm ready for this, you know, I'm over it, I'm sore, I'm hurting, and you know, I've got pain, don't get me wrong, and I'm not sleeping at night. As I said to you, I've been up since 3 a.m. this morning. I did manage a quick half an hour nap at one point, but I'm still just loving being pregnant. So as much as obviously I want her here, I'm kind of pretty content where I am, but I can't wait. Crossing the threshold of our house with her in her, you know, the car seat. And I know that sometimes I can imagine I'm going to take a photo of Bob crossing the threshold with her. There's just little things like that, that it's just like, wow. And also, and I'll stop now, but I'll just say this. I've always thought that when you are home for the first night and it's you and the baby and, you know, whatever parentage kind of, you know, if you're a solo mum or, you know, whoever are the parents. And I can just imagine like shutting the door and like pulling the curtains and just being like, shit, what do we do now? They've left us here with them. Oh my God. So I don't know whether I'll have a smile on my face when I'm saying that for real.
Yeah.
But yeah, little bits like that I'm kind of looking forward to.
I think that will melt your heart
yeah.
in ways that you couldn't imagine possible when you see the two of them together.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. I really can't. Oh my gosh. That is going to be everything for me. But anyway, right, I'm just gonna float through today after this conversation. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I'll put information about a couple of the bits we talked about, particularly actually the TENS machine. I'll put those in the show notes, and I'll put links so that people can come and find you on Twitter and Instagram as well. And you do have some, I'm just gonna do a little plug for you now because I love that, but you do have some cards that you make, don't you?
I do, yeah, a little side hustle.
We love a side hustle.
Just channeling my creativity, really. Yeah, just like to kind of really bring that personal kind of touch to greeting cards for people.
Yeah, so we'll put a link to that as well.
Awesome.
Super. All right then, Jazz, thank you so, so much. I really, really have appreciated this chat.
No, thank you. Have a lovely weekend.
Yes, you too. Take care. Bye-bye.